Hey, what's going on, Stage Right family? On today's episode, we have our very good friend, Mr. Joe King, a great front of house engineer and production manager for bands like Revolution, Iration, and The Green.
And father now, let's not forget that.
Yes, that's the most important, I guess, these days. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
This guy is someone that I consider family, and I'm very happy to have him on the show today to give us a little insight into the live music world.
Yeah. I'm happy to be here. Good to see your faces and hear some familiar voices.
That's right. That's what we all need in these times.
I know. Seriously.
Dude, yeah. I think we've known each other almost like 10 years now.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, was it Blackout Tour? Expendables? Were you on that one? Or was it Domination?
Domination, exactly. Tour.
Yeah, that was, probably close to 10 years. Expendables, Iration. And you were living in Florida at that time? Or were you in...
I was still living in Florida. And then after that tour, I made the move out there to Santa Cruz.
That's right.
Yeah.
How was Carlos 10 years ago? How has he changed? Was he good back then too, or was he just a little shit?
Oh, he's always been good. It's we ran across each other here and there. I mean, he's I think done way bigger and better things since then. Not to say the Domination Tour wasn't big or better, but that was a very fun tour for sure. Anything with the Expendables is always a blast. I think that might have been, we might have done a handful of shows together, but I think that was the only full tour we did together. So I think after
you didn't answer my question. I said, was he a little shit back then? That was the meat of the question.
Yes, we all were little shits back then.
We were all
a little clueless and I know I had no idea what I was doing for a while. I might still not know what I'm doing, but you fake it till you make it. That's what I always say.
Learning along the way, man. Learning with each other, from each other. Fuck, remember sharing analog consoles and just figuring out like channels to share with the patching and just because we both couldn't fit on the same board without,
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't, there's some stages where we had to, I think both Adam and Joe wanted to use their own drums and, which made a little difficult, and then you're both trying to sound check and analog board days, those House of Blues.
We still didn't carry consoles yet. Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, I don't even think we had a monitor.
No, you guys had the LS9. That was the tour where the LS9 rack got left in
San Francisco.
Yeah. And we had a show at San Luis Obispo the next day.
Correct. That was Peeper's first night. And the look on his face in San Luis Obispo is ingrained in my memory of the biggest panic, fear,
like
life just dropped out of him.
And that was his first tour with you guys, yeah?
Yeah. And because the band had just gone to Ears and we had brought in Peeper's on. He built this, sled of a case, refrigerator case,
so
that weighed probably 2,000 pounds.
I had to move that twice recently and holy fucking shit.
Yeah. I mean, the case was built with like probably half inch plywood too. So, probably 2,000 pound casters. And
it has no casters now, by the way. So you have to drag it.
Oh, nice. That's smart. Just put a sled on it.
Nope, just Peepers and I just wrench it.
Yeah. And so that was, Peepers' creation, which was amazing if we had it. We did the San Francisco show. We all, I think, went a little big that night. And I remember coming out to the trailer because we had parked kind of around the corner from the Fillmore. And so there's kind of a push. And as you know, it's a union house there and not the most friendly.
You can't really touch any cases. There's a lift.
And some guys can't do this and some guys can't do that. And, they'll leave your stuff at the gate and then you got pushers to push out. So the biggest, case when I came back to the trailer around 2 or 3 a.m., I think we came back from the bars and I want to say Nijo was still counting merch or doing something and he had to open the trailer. And we opened it and I looked in and I said, hey, you know, I went to the back of the bus, actually tapped on the window and they're all in the back lounge. And I'm like, guys, I think there's a pretty big hole in the trailer. I think we're missing something. And I was like, no, come on, King. It's 2 a.m. Like, come on. We loaded that thing like hours ago. And I'm like, all right. And sure enough, we wake up in San Luis Obispo. And, you know, probably the biggest show of the tour that was because it was at the Madonna in a big... Madonna Inn in a big, just, you know, open convention room. And the place where you want to have in-ear monitors. We didn't have them. So, you know, Peepers went through his panic, but knowing Peepers, he can make anything happen with anything. So
I don't know how.
Yeah.
True.
Well, Coors Light, it's pretty simple. Yeah. It's pretty simple math. There's an equation that, you know, before 6, he's useless. After 22, he's useless. But right in between those numbers, he is magical.
Once I had a really bad stage buzz and I was like, I can't figure this out, Peeps. Can you try and help me? And he goes, yeah, give me a guitar string and an extension cable.
Oh my God.
And he just like, he takes the guitar string, shoves it into the ground of the extension cable and wraps it around the quarter inch on the front of the amp. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man?
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Just like the first year of One Love when we show up at like 6 in the morning and there's no stage manager, no hands, no nothing. The genie lift is there already. And Peeps just hotwired it. And there's no ramp to stay, so like this was the only way, and there was no one to help us. So Peeps was like, "Fuck it!" Boom, did it. Got everything to stage.
I think he carries a universal key for like every vehicle. He's always got a key for like some vehicle, like golf cart.
Yeah,
he's got it. Forklift. He'll get in there and drive it.
Yeah, but yeah, that show happened. They used wedges. I think some powered Mackies. You know, it was. It happened. The show happened. That's all that matters. So
show must go on, right?
Yeah. So that was our first meeting.
I think we need to have you on for a part. We have to have you on for a part 2 where it's you and Peepers.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I think that'd be pretty good.
That'd be a great one.
That would be good.
Yeah. I have some really good memories of that tour, man. Very grateful for those times. Definitely a big learning experience every night.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All those rooms and different setups, still using console du jour and system du jour, everything, you know, what you have is what you got.
Yeah, exactly. And that's you know, and unfortunately people nowadays, you know, new kids coming into this scene don't have that anymore. They don't even know what an analog console is or even where to begin to use it. You know, most everyone's got a file for something and if not a console.
If not a console,
So, but yeah, it was fun times.
Do you think it's do you look at it as an advantage to like that digital consoles are so like affordable and accessible now that every band can almost have like an M32 or X32 versus like just kind of grinding your teeth on like whatever the venue has?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the sake of the band, the artists themselves, having consistency with, especially with just their onstage rig, that is night and day, you know, the best thing that's happened to, you know, smaller bands that can now afford to do in-ears, you know, even though it's still a big expense to do it.
Yeah.
But it's an investment for your career, your ears, especially, and it'll only make your craft better. But I think there is a downside to it. I think it can go all the way to the trickle down to the fans, because I think a lot of, you know, front of house engineers will just rely on these scenes basically. And they're just popping their stick in and not really understanding the analog side of it or the gain structure. I think that's just, I mean, that's what I was taught. The first thing I was ever taught was gain structure. And I think that's, that is the art of doing sound. And I always say there's no right or wrong way to do sound. There is obviously a wrong way if there's feedback, or if something just flat out doesn't work, but it's a subjective craft. And, you know, what sounds good to me might not sound good to you and vice versa. And that's the beauty of it. And that's, I think, where you learn the most is just listening and watching other engineers and tricks, and you pick up little things here and there, and then you make them your own. And being a front of house engineer, all you really have to please is yourself. And you can't really second guess yourself. You have to trust in what you're doing. You know, obviously if there's a manager out there, or, you know, you're going to have your occasional fans come up to you and say something, and you do the old fake twist the knob trick and say, oh, let me, where are you sitting? Oh, up there. Oh yeah. Let me just, there you go. You should be good now. I'm very lucky. I would never do monitors, and hats off to you, Carlos, or every monitor engineer out there. And I always say this, it's a huge monster. I mean, you're mixing for 20 artists at a time, and, you know, obviously you have your primary, but to be able to make all them happy and to create a mix that they enjoy, which could be god awful to you, which mm-hmm. I know a lot of artists that want something that you listen to, you're just like, what? You okay? This is good. And then you know,
sure you want this? Okay.
Yeah.
You sure? That sounds good to you. Yeah. You're happy. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want overhead mics in it? Okay. There you go. There's your mix. And that, you know, it's just, it's a different beast for sure. And it's, I think that's to me, probably the hardest job on tour as a monitor engineer. And a lot of monitor engineers will never do front of house, and they have the same, not to say they wouldn't, but there is some things that come along in front of house that are very intimidating too. You know, you get up to festival with 20,000 people and you press that unmute button and you got no sound check and off you go. That's a little nerve wracking.
Yeah. I still get that excitement on big festivals like that at front of house. It's a different beast. Yeah. There's pros and cons to both positions for sure. I enjoy doing them both, but it is hard. Like at monitors, you are in the trenches, like, and you're not mixing for yourself. It's a less creative job, but at the end of the day, you are on stage, you are in the trenches. So the connection that you build with your artist, your band, is on a different level. There's a lot of trust and just unspoken things that hopefully as an engineer, you want to get there, like where you're looking at your artist and before they even tell you or signal you to what they want, you know.
Yeah. And that's huge. And the trust between myself and whoever the monitor engineer that I'm working with is same thing. I mean, same thing as backline, you know, everyone on stage, having that trust, knowing that your guys on stage are going to fix anything that happens, or, you know, because ultimately if the band's not happy or they're having, you know, technical shocker, the show's going to suffer. But to have that confidence at front of house, because at front of house, you're so separated from everything. I mean, it's a little helpless feeling. But to have that confidence in your stage, everyone up on stage, is such a key factor.
Yeah, you can worry about what you're doing, not be worried about, oh man, I wonder if this is going to get fixed on stage, or if this happened last night, I wonder if it's going to happen again tonight.
Yep.
You know, you want a team that you can rely on, that mistakes happen once and they don't happen again.
Exactly. And I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong and so many signal paths that you got to trace, and, you know, something could work on stage but couldn't work at front of house. And then, you know, you're on your radio, which is useless and while the show's going on.
Yeah.
That's a key thing in live music, is, you know, that trust between, you know, what's going on stage and everything else around you.
Absolutely. So how did you start in all this? Like, why did you start? What brought you into the world of music?
So I went to high school with Micah, Jody, Adam, Kaysen's brother, Catlin. And Kaysen was a little younger. I knew him, obviously, when we were in high school, but they all went to UC Santa Barbara. I went to San Diego State for 2 years. Didn't necessarily go to class that often in San Diego State, so needed a change, and went up to Santa Barbara in 2003. And at that point, Iration was formed with not, you know, I think Joe and Adam are the only two people in it at that time. We had Catlin, Kaysen's brother, Rory, keyboard player for Revolution. Parker Anderson, he played guitar and some keyboards. Racy Biven sang. So I lived with Joe D, and the band kind of rehearsed at that house a few times. They did a show at Velvet Jones, and I was 20 at the time, and it was a 21 and up show. And Joe basically said, "Hey, just come sit by me and shake a tambourine or do something, because I could be at the show if I was on stage." And so I did that. Didn't really have any percussion background. But at that at that time, we owned a, I would call it a Guitar Center PA. It was a 16 or maybe 24 channel Mackie, powered Mackie mixer, built in effects. We had two JBL double 18 or double 15 with a horn. And then we eventually bought some subs or rented subs or did, you know, I don't think we had any subs in the beginning, but so we would rehearse with that setup and then we would play shows in Isla Vista, house parties.
House parties.
So we would, So we built these stages out of plywood. They're 4x8 pieces of plywood by 2 feet tall. I think we had 5 or 6 of them. We would find a backyard and ask the people that live there if we can do a show. And I think at that point, everyone knew who the band was. And they're kind of excited to have, you know, just a raging 2,000 people house party. So we did that. And I had the console. At that point, Joe D knew the most about the console. But since I came in and was shaking tambourines or, you know, doing something, figured I could put the console by me and, you know, go from there. And at that point, I was on stage and was behind the PA. So, again, had no idea really what I was doing or how it sounded, as long as there's some vocal mics through. And then at that point, we had met Pepper. We knew Pepper, but Ramey de Rochemont, who was Pepper's sound engineer, was probably the closest to all of us. And he was actually the kind of reason why Iration eventually signed on Law Records for the Time Bomb album. He kind of took me under his wing and showed me some stuff. And then I think in about 2005, maybe, we had done a show with the Expendables at Slow Brew. And I was still on stage at the time. I think we had like 10 of us on stage. It was, and you know, Slow Brew, it's like the smallest catty corner stage. And Expendables, you know, left their stuff up and we set up in front and, you know, all 47 of us on stage and me with my, you know, blocks and tambourines. It was just like, all right, what are we doing? Like, this doesn't make sense. And Catlin, I think at the time we had watched the Expendables and Donovan was mixing them and the show was fucking amazing, loud, fucking clean. And we looked and said, hey, look what having your own guy could do. And if we want to take this seriously, then maybe I should do that. So at that point was the turning point of when I moved off the tambourine and behind the console.
I just can't picture that. You with blocks and a tambourine standing next to Joe D on stage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just offbeat and, you know. It was good. It was fun. I did play up percussions on pretty much all the albums up until I think Hot Enough. I did some, and then Micah Brown did some too. Some of the more technical stuff, or Joe D would do some of the more technical rhythmic stuff. But no, I did all the percussions on all the albums up to that.
Automatic, yeah.
Automatic. No Time for Rest. Time Bomb. All the EPs. So, yeah, that was basically the beginning. And then we went on our first tour with Pepper and Ramey was with us. And I mean, I honestly knew nothing. And, but, you know, that's what Ramey told me, same thing. You know, he just you just throw you into the shit and figure it out. And, you know, I think the best part about this job is that you still figure it out every day. And the technology changes and equipment changes and PAs change and
new things always come up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, every, you know, even if you have your own console and your own, you're self-contained 100%, it's still not going to be the exact same. I mean, you try to make, I mean, that's your job is to put on the same show every day. But, you know, you again, you watch other people, you tour with other artists and other engineers and you see what they do. And, but that's the special part about this job. And I think that's why I've done it for this long and still enjoy it.
When did like the passion set in for sound? Like, cause you jumped to it kind of out of necessity. When did it change from necessity to this is who I am. This is what I want to do.
That's a good question. So I would say once I started, I can't really think of an actual time per se, but I think when there were shows, I could probably count on my hands the time of shows that I've walked away saying that was a really good show. And not to say that I've never done that many good shows, just I'm very hard on yourself. And yeah, you have to be at front of house. And I think when those shows started happening, and I think it was getting into some venues that, you know, you get into the Fillmore SF or you get into Ogden, Fox Theater, Boulder, venues that sound really good. And you don't have to be that amazing to really enjoy it and to really, you know, have a good show. Fox Theater is probably my favorite club venue. Even back in the 930 Club's amazing.
First Avenue.
depends on when it was. Then I recently did a show there with the new PA and it's a little better. But again, that's I'm trying to think of other great ones. You know, any House of Blues are pretty standard across the board. Yeah. And I think once I started, you know, people come up to you after say great show and, you know, I think once you start having the confidence and the artists and other people have confidence in you as well, I think is when you, that turning point and saying, okay, I'm actually, you know, halfway decent at what I do. And then you get into, you know, I think, you know, now with Revolution, it's a whole new level. And that's becomes, you know, you gain more stress and more things come up, but also at the same time, it becomes a little more, it's a cool environment. Cause I mean, you're at a high level, you're coming in pretty much self-contained, you know, you're putting up big PAs and it's a big show. And I think when you see all that come together, the passion, you know, comes along with it. Cause you really get to see this production from start to finish.
Come to life.
Yeah, exactly. And I still get, you know, goosebumps every now and then when those moments happen. I mean, you get into some, you know, big places and everything, like I said, you hit that unmute button and everything comes to life and it's a good feeling for sure.
Dude. Yeah. Love to hear that, man. Do you have any memorable, super memorable shows that stand out with either, you know, any artist that you worked for?
It's a good question. And unfortunately, the memorable ones are the ones that something went wrong.
let's talk about those then. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we can get deep into those.
You never forget those, hopefully. That's how you learn.
No, exactly. Yeah, you don't. The most memorable one, I think I talked about this one before on that Root Fire talk, but we did the Palladium in LA and at
legendary.
That point, yeah, at that point, I think Beast, Iration's manager and everyone kind of was like, oh, good luck. It's a tough venue to mix, all this stuff. And, And you know, I was like, okay, whatever. And we at that point had our consoles and our Pro 2. And, you know, we were pretty dialed in with our setup. And the show was sold out.
This is headlining, yeah?
Headlining, yes. Headlining. It was the biggest, definitely the biggest show that Iration had done. A club show, a hard ticket show at that point. Because I think we did the World Turn a few times. And then that was the next step, is to go to the Palladium. So we had sound checked, and I was more than happy with how it sounded with an empty room. So I knew at that point, hey, it's only going to get better from here. Because if it sounds this good with no one here, it's just going to get better. And even the house sound guy, you know, gave you that little nod, which is always a assuring feeling, because they're usually not the ones that compliment you on anything. So the show started, and just like I expected, it sounded great. Really tight mix for that, you know, big of a room. It was a, you know, everyone is there. LA, San Diego, you have 200 guests. And we had to use, I don't know if we had to use, we're using lasers at that point. And so all of a sudden, there's a part in Hotting Up where Micah says, deal with the devil. And on our console, I had, you know, deal with the devil. So at that point, I had a detune effect. So it kind of gave us a durable to Daryl, like kind of a weird, and it was, I didn't pitch, use it all the time. Yeah. Pitch shift. Exactly. So, I didn't use it all the time, and it was never as audible as I would like it to be. And I didn't really sound check with it. But all I would do is just unmute the return and mute it again. So, sure enough, Hotting Up comes up. This is, I think, the first song of the encore. Hit that unmute button, and boom, PA goes down. And I'm standing there. The console's still up, signaling audio coming out. So my first thought is amps went out. So I look back at the house guy, and he's just sitting there, not even aware of the PA just shut off. I'm like, hey. Something happened. Deoxin. Yeah, we'll get to that later. But I look back and you know, I'm like, go check the amps. Like, get off your ass and go do something. And he kind of waddles around, looks at the processor. You know, he's like, oh, everything's on. Everything's there. I'm not getting signal to the amps. So randomly, and this is where the laser guy comes in. So Greg, this guy Greg, who we had leased the lasers from, his partner looked over at me and said, shut the console off and turn it back on. And you know, that's a big thing to do, because it takes, you know, it could take quite a while for a console to kick back on, especially a digital console. And also, you don't know what's going to happen, if that file saved or where it's going to come back once the, you know, comes back on. And I didn't have the guy mute the processors.
Oh no.
Because again, I had no idea. But he looked at me and said, turn the console off, turn it back on. My friend writes software for every digital console, and there's a safety mechanism in all of them that basically, if the console peaks out, it'll stop passing signal. This has happened to me before on PM5D too. But basically, it's to protect the PA. So if all of a sudden something starts looping into a console or hits red, has to really hit red. And maybe, you know, maybe it did, maybe it did. I don't know. Again, I couldn't tell you the exact reason, but I did it. Turn the console off, turn it back on. And the band was still playing, because everything obviously on their end was fine. I think eventually they realized that the PA was off. And it was probably a good minute. It felt like an hour.
Yeah.
But a minute's a long time. And especially at the encore too, people are kind of wondering, all right, I guess we'll leave. Or see some people walking out and you're just like, you turn the console back on, you're just sitting there and just like, uh-oh. And then boom, came on, everything was fine. So that was probably a very, very memorable show for the wrong reasons, but also the right reasons, because it did sound great other than that. But yeah, and again, I couldn't tell you if that was the case. you know, if maybe when Chris, like you said, if the DSP card went out, maybe that bypasses that function or.
Yeah. Maybe the software's in there or something. I don't know.
King. So here at Stage Right, we ask everyone, what's your favorite bagel? More so like when you're on tour, you wake up, you're on the bus. How's your spread look?
How's our spread? So to be honest, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a bagel guy or a bagel fiend, but there's, if we're going back to bagels, there's one spot in Isla Vista where Iration and Revolution started called Bagel Cafe. It was kind of your choice of three options for breakfast. It was breakfast burrito, the co-op, you know, some sort of contraption there, or Bagel Cafe. And then my go-to there was either onion bagel or everything bagel, regular cream cheese, avocado, lemon pepper, and sprouts. And I can't.
That's where Colin got the lemon pepper from, isn't it? Because he brought that up.
Yes. Yeah. That's Isla Vista. Yeah. That's, and it's your stock McCormick lemon pepper, nothing fancy. Has that very pungent lemon taste. But yeah, it was this spot that just had a line out the door every day. I wouldn't say the best bagels in the world, but it was something that was, you know, just a good breakfast. And I think I was probably not eating meat at the time either. So, but yeah, that would probably be my go-to if I could have that again, or if I go up that way, I'll usually stop by and pick that up.
You were a vegetarian?
Yeah, for a little bit, you know, living with Rory and Parker, we were both vegans. I was probably vegan for a couple of months, but never full vegan. But we would always do, and that's how, you know, Colin and I met. And we would always do kind of potlucks on Sundays. And we would always make vegan because Parker and Rory were there, so. You know, we would do vegan lasagnas or guacamoles and just, you know, try to expand on our vegan creatism.
Creativity. Yeah, the word.
Sure.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, when was your last show, your last tour?
So... luckily, I had done a tour with Duran Jones and the Indications. Yeah, they are.
I fucking love that band.
Yeah, they are. It was very outside of my bubble and outside of what I. It actually, to be honest, it made me question my ability to do sound because this was almost a 3-month tour in a van. It was a 6-day on, 1 day off, very,
all days.
Yeah, it was, and I was TM for the house. We had a Sprinter van with a trailer and it was just Bree Brown and I, and not Bree Brown, sorry. Bree, Ted's wife, Bree, from Pacifier. She was doing merch and it was just me doing TM in front of house. And we had played some shows. There's some venues that I thought I'd never see again in my life.
Which ones?
See, I probably forgot them already because I never wanted to see them. where was it? I mean, there were some, we did some shows in Mississippi that I'd never been to. I mean, they were like 100 cap, you know, little bars with, you know, I mean, again, going back to the being fortunate for the M32 and X32, most venues at least have those. So you had something to work with, but
those small Mississippi venues are gnarly in those tiny little towns. No, it's a different breed of people down there.
Yeah.
And they're a big band. Yeah. They have.
Yeah. So they had left like this tour, they'd only done the core five. They didn't bring horns on this tour. Yeah. So, and I'd met them the year prior. They were on the summer tour with us with Reb. Yeah. So at that point, Corey Scott Haas kind of met them on that tour. And then after that tour, he had kind of started doing TM stuff for them in front of house. And then again, last year, Dean, their manager, hit me up and said, hey, do you want to come do this tour? And at the time, I had nothing confirmed. And again, as you know, I think they're going to be, and they already are. I mean, they're going to be huge one day. And I mean, they're big in California, the West Coast for sure, big in Europe. So it was a good opportunity. You know, again, it really brought me back to reality and like what, you know, what it takes to mix a band like that, especially because I think what we strive for with the bands that I primarily work for is to get consistency and really to limit your dynamics. And that is the opposite of what Duran Jones and the Indications are. I mean, they are dynamic and that's a tough to mix in a little bar setting when your crowd is at 105 dB and your singer's playing drums, singing falsetto, trying to get that over the crowd is a very hard task to do. So that was, it definitely pushed me to my limits, hit some breaking points. And, but looking back on it, we had got home on March 8th. And I think everything shut down like that next week.
Yeah. The 11th or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So that was, it was a fun tour. We did two nights at Brooklyn Bowl in New York, and they had brought in, I think, seven members, additional band members. So they did a string quartet, horn section, or it may have been 10, I guess. So string quartet, horn section, two backup singers, percussion, which was really cool. To see them with that was really special.
It's amazing. Did you record any of these?
We did. Nothing crazy. I think it was just a Tascam, like four channel, you know, two direct and two microphones.
Left, right. And,
yeah. But nothing that was, I want to say we did record somewhere, some multi-tracks. I can't remember where we did. We might've done Brooklyn Bowl actually, but yeah, they were, you know, way different than any bands I worked for, but definitely a fun, cool experience and really good guys and really good music. And, but it was fun.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah. And then I flew back and did One Love with Reb. And I think we did Cali Roots in Arizona or Arizona Roots. And those are the two last festivals I did.
I miss those festivals. Did you get COVID, do you think?
You know, that's a good question. That tour we did, Aaron, the drummer, was sick almost the entire 2 months. He couldn't kick anything. Like, he was just congested and Bree as well. She had kind of been sick and I didn't get anything. And again, who knows? It's something that, you know.
Yeah, I have the assumption we all kind of got it because on our last run, there was a bunch of sickness spreading through the bus before we even really knew what COVID was. So I'm guessing most people in the touring world have already had it at least once.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was in the U.S. by November of the year prior would be my guess. And because I've known people in Hawaii in 2019 that basically had every symptom, you know, loss of smell, loss of taste. And this is in November of, you know, before that, you know, first Seattle case.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know any better. I think it's kind of sad because our industry is pretty careful about that, but we just had no idea. You know, it's too bad.
Yeah, so who knows? Maybe, and hopefully I got it already, and then, you know, and survived.
Yeah, antibodies, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but...
And then as we come back to, like, touring opening up, do you have any plans to maybe return to the tambourine or the blocks?
You know... There's always a chance for returning to tambourine.
But, I see it. I really do.
Yeah. Oh, man. Back in my heyday during the No Time for Rest, I mean, we had like six tambourines at that point. You know, you get the wooden ones with the really old rusty bells and
Oh, those are the best.
No, there. I think there was probably talk at some point in the beginning of like me coming back and doing percussions, but that ship had sailed. You know, once I got my feet into this world, there's obviously more I can give to the band than playing tambourine.
But well, I look forward to that day when I see you on stage next to Joe again.
Yeah, I know. One of these days.
If you could go back in time to when you were starting, what would be something that you would tell yourself? Like a piece of advice that you've learned or just anything. Like you got one tip and then you go come back to the present moment.
Yeah, that's a good question. The biggest thing to me is don't get upset or don't fight with people. Mainly house people. That was the biggest thing for me when I came through and came up in this is that, as you know, you'll go into a club and you'll meet the house guy and doesn't even look you in the eye and just starts the day off like a piece of shit. And back then and back in the beginning, I would just add gas to that fire and say, okay, well, fuck you. You're going to be like that. And I'm going to make your fucking day. Just ruin your life and be a dick right back to you and yell at you and threaten to write a letter to William Morris and, you know, just blow my lid. And that was kind of the reality of what we did. And some people deserve it still. But nowadays it takes a lot for me to get to that level. If someone comes up to me and we start our day like that, you know, I try to pull them aside and say, hey, listen, we can do this two ways. We can look each other in the eye and say, let's have a great day and be friends. Or we can go down this road of saying, you're a dick, I'll be a dick. Let's just make this day shitty. Because our lives are hard as it is. You know, we're all sacrificing things to be here. Let's make the best of it. Let's have a laugh. Let's have fun. Let's all be on our game and just do the show, because at the end of the day, the show's got to go on. And, but you know, every tour there'll be one or two guys that I'll send home, just cause they just don't get to that point and they keep pushing the envelope. And I said, okay, well then just leave. What's your point
just
of
go
being
home,
here?
Yeah. You're rocking my day.
Yeah.
Rocking my shirt.
Exactly. You're cancer right now and you're bringing everyone else down with you. Once it gets to that point, they'll usually be like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, well, you had your chance. So,
yeah. So before we wrap this up, I have one last story I'd like you to tell that I've only heard once. It's rumored that you don't like being touched. And I believe once a security officer tried to put his hands on you and it didn't end very well for him.
Yeah.
Can you share that story?
It was probably more than once. I'm not a big fan of, I wouldn't say I don't like to be touched. I just don't like to be grabbed by security mainly because they've seen me there all day. They have no reason to touch me or to, be aggressive with me in any way. So that story goes back to Boston. We had a show at Paradise with Iration, and we had a day off afterwards, and Stick Figure and The Green were playing at a club down the street. So it was our day off. We had, you know, started drinking early, and I think someone brought Jello shots or something weird. And we go to the show, and the Green guys are playing. And again, credit to the security guard. It wasn't necessarily our show. I was just some random guy that was there. But that didn't change my mindset about security guards. I think there's a little stage right area that we're watching from. And I think I walked up and like grabbed Zion and gave him a hug and did something as walking him back off the stage, and it knocked over one of their guitar mics. So I just reached out and picked it up. And at that point, reaching out and picked it up, I feel this hand grab my shoulder and yank me back. And I just went into full UFC mode and turned around without even thinking and just knocked the guy right in the face and then bolted up the stairs because it was downstairs. So I'm now climbing up these stairs. I have two security guards on my back. Colin's at the top of the stairs and like trying to pull me off of them or pull me up the stairs. We get up, Colin gets them off my back, and then we had fallen into the street and almost got basically our heads run over by a car. And yeah, that was the first. I think there was another night with the green. Same thing happened. I think we were back in the green room or something, and security guard just grabbed my shoulder and I said, nope. And without hesitation, just went off on him. Yeah, those days are over.
Yeah.
But yes, that was that Boston show was a memorable one for sure.
It's a great image, just Colin pulling you up the stairs, you two guys just hanging on for it.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm smiling ear to ear because I probably knew I was in the wrong, but these guys were, you know, I'm not the smallest guy in the world, but these guys were just, I was carrying them up the stairs on my back, just laughing. Yeah.
Yeah. How tall are you, King?
6'6".
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So not a small man.
No. Can't miss no. So.
Dude, what gear are you using with Reb right now? Or, well, when, you know.
Yeah, when it comes back. So I was super bummed this, you know, last year got canceled because we had finally made the jump to fully self-contained audio and lighting. They had been contained lighting-wise for the last probably 5-6 years, but we had just done control packages before that. So this year we were slated to do 2 SXLs, 24Ds, I think that's what they are, the three screens. And we had a K2 rig, I think 16 boxes a side with 24 KS28s.
God damn.
And that's amazing. Yeah. Oh my God. And then we had, and it was through, we were going to use RAT was our provider. Cool. Yeah. We had talked to them. They did the One Love that year as well. So we had talked to him then and got everything finalized after that. And we had 2 extra audio guys. So we had a systems tech and then an A3. So yeah, it was something that I've been pushing the band for the last 2 years that I've been working for them. I think there's so much, I mean, as you know, Stupid has done it forever. They understand the significance of having your own with, you know, Wiz pushing that on them. And it shows tenfold of, you know, I mean, Wiz is a great engineer, but having that PA every day and as someone there tuning the PA,
yeah,
it just makes things so consistent.
That guy's really just rocking those white gloves like no one's business.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Don't we all? Man. I mean, don't we all want to?
That's our new merch item is going to be branded white gloves.
I'll buy a shirt.
Dude, yeah. Every piece of consistency you can have that adds to the overall consistency of things on tour is key and goals, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you know, as production manager as well on that tour, you know, having those 2 extra audio guys would take so much off my plate, you know, allow me to at least be in the office for, you know, an hour or two instead of being on the deck, you know, trying to organize everything. So, but, yeah, it definitely, but we were 2 trucks, 2 buses, and that put us at a full bus too with 12 with the 2 extra guys. And I think we had to move, one person to the band bus, probably Sam or someone, photographer, would jump on them just to, you know, open up those 2 spots. Cause otherwise getting a 3rd bus would have been throwing all the numbers off. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's, yeah. So hopefully, and again, who knows if it comes back this year, what's it going to look like? you know, everything's changing. So it's going to be almost a new, new for everybody.
Yeah, I think so.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on that same page. I think it's going to have a new, a different face, but the show must go on.
Exactly.
You know, it will come back.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I think on that note, it's time to wrap this fucker up.
All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. It was so good to talk to you again. And I can't fucking wait to see you on the road again and hear your shitty mix.
Yeah, thank you.
Yikes.
I can't wait to mix shitty for you. And I'll bring 2 cans of deoxin for you just in case.
Yeah, thanks. I'm going to need it.
Yeah. It fixes everything.
It really does.
So great to see you, King. Right, thanks for coming on, dude.
Oh, yeah, good to talk to you guys and be safe. And can't wait to see you guys out there.
Hell yeah.
Same,
thanks,
King.
All right, boss.
Thanks, man.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast. Thank you.